If you haven't played Paddy Power Fantasy yet, you're missing out. But on the upside, if you haven't played it yet, you qualify for a risk-free first go. Get up to £20 back as cash when you play Paddy Power Fantasy. And because every NFL game day is a season in itself, you don't have to wait to find out if you've won. Paddy Power Fantasy. Hate waiting, love winning. New customer offer, min £5, max £20 refund. T's and C's apply. Paddy Power Fantasy rules apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show, presented by Paddy Power Fantasy. Happy Monday, everybody. Good to have you with us as we look back at an extraordinary Sunday, week 10 in the NFL. So many things to get into. Lamar Jackson staking his MVP claim with a virtuoso performance once again. What a player. What a win for the Minnesota Vikings. Kirk Cousins winning in primetime. Who'd have thunk it? Beating the Dallas Cowboys. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the New Orleans Saints. Absolutely shellacked by this Atlanta Falcons defense. What on earth went on with Drew Brees and co there? We'll try and work that one out. The Rams struggling too. The Steelers suddenly in sneaky playoff contention. So much to get into. So stay with us for that. Don't forget, if you follow us on social media at the NC Show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, lots of extra content flying out all week long. Four episodes dropping each and every week. I and Mike every Wednesday. We're going to chat to Ben Isaacs this Wednesday as well, looking back at a huge game in college football, the Alabama LSU game, and what that means for the NFL 2020 draft. And a Friday episode getting you set for the weekend too. So loads coming your way this week, but we will get right into it with the great Greg Brady. Greg Brady, how are you, man?
Oh, what a great time of year. Great Sunday of games and looking ahead. I mean, this Monday's a good game. Next Thursday's a good game. So we're getting really down to where games feel not like elimination games. And that's the fun part when we get into that mid-November period.
Trying to work out who eliminated who in the Jets-Giants game, but we'll get to that later on. We've got to start with Sunday Night Football. What a performance from the Minnesota Vikings. And I mean, typically, Kirk Cousins goes into primetime, gets the win for his team, plays pretty capably, but there's an asterisk against Kirk Cousins' performance. He's bugbear. He can't do it in the big games. He's not a big clutch player. Gets the win, plays well, but no, they beat them on the ground. It was because of Dalvin Cook. That's why they beat the Cowboys. It wasn't because of Kirk Cousins. Poor guy. Even when he gets a break, he can't get a break.
Yeah, did they lose because of him or win in spite of him? That seems to be the Vikings mantra. That's not a good bumper sticker to have on the back of your motor vehicle. Yeah, I'd say even the week before, right? He looked safe in terms of like, well, you really won't be able to pin the loss to the Kansas City Chiefs on Kirk Cousins, but he was really ineffective late. They couldn't move the football. The Vikings play calling got really conservative. Yeah, really a tale of two games yesterday because Minnesota roars out of the gate. They look fantastic. That circus catch by Kyle Rudolph, it was no Odell Beckham Jr. on Sunday Night Football, but it was pretty dynamic. And then Dallas,
he's a big fella as well, so he's carrying a bit more timber than Odell.
That's a lot more timber to carry and balance it. it was really something. But then Dallas roars back. But I also thought last night's the typical example, Matt, of Jason Garrett maybe being outcoached by Mike Zimmer. I didn't like a lot of the offensive play calling. I think they've got to find some creativity with Dak Prescott that just isn't there right now. Right now, it looks like for Dak, and I know Ezekiel Elliott didn't have a wonderful night by any stretch, 2.4 yards a carry on 20 carries. So it's not like they stopped feeding him the football, but it just looks like Prescott's only outlet valve strikes me as Amari Cooper. He's looking for him, telegraphing it to him too much, targeted him a ton, 14 times, made 11 completions to him. But there's just something a little off with Dallas's offense. And we knew the early part of that schedule when Ezekiel Elliott was holding out, we thought, well, this won't affect him in the first few weeks. Elliott came back. They won their first three football games, got to play easy teams, Miami Dolphins, New York Giants, but they are really struggling playing some of their NFC contemporaries. And you might have seen the quote Jerry Jones said it after the game. This is going to make it really hard to go where we need to go. And I did not think they'd end up after being 3-0, losing four of their next six games. I'm not a big Cowboys believer. I'm not a huge Dak believer. So I didn't think they were going to the Super Bowl, But I didn't think they were still a bubble playoff team when they started 3-0 and looked really good on both sides of the football.
So many questions here on this. I take your point, not establishing the run games severely diminished them, because despite that, you could argue Prescott did have a decent day at the office all in all, throwing, you know, spraying the ball around. He was getting a lot of his receivers involved. Before the game, a story broke, of course, on NFL.com, the Cowboys off the bye week, that it looks more and more likely that they are not going to re-up Dak's deal, and they might have to franchise tag him, or he might have to settle for the franchise tag next season. We had a guy, Dallas radio host, on our radio show last night, NFL live show last night, asking him about that, and he was very relaxed and quite blasé about it. The challenge that they paid Zeke, they've got to probably pay Amari Cooper, they've got to probably pay Dak. How are they going to afford it? He said, look, when the CBA is done and the gambling element is factored into that, the salary caps are going to increase. It's not going to be a big problem. He had Jerry Jones on his show, Greg, and said Jerry Jones was towing that line very clearly. So there doesn't seem to be a huge amount of concern about what they do with Dak Prescott in terms of renewing the deal, and the money will be there. But nevertheless, it's going to be a big problem if they do splutter maybe out of playoff contention, eke out a playoff berth, but go out early doors, whether they believe that Dak is the guy to go forward if they're going to be paying him all that.
Well, that's right. And that's, you know, at least the one thing you can say that the minimum about the Cowboys through the years, especially the Jason Garrett years, is they generally speak, management speaks with one collective voice. Not a lot leaks out, and there's not a lot of tension. Even all the stuff we heard about tension with New England, with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, even when Jimmy G was there, we heard,
right,
is this a bit of a dysfunctional scenario with a football team that wins 13, 14 games every year? We don't necessarily say that with Dallas, because it's just Jerry Jones's team. His son is the assistant general manager, Jason Garrett, really, in essence. I don't doubt he calls the plays, but he very much falls in line. And if they're falling out of love with Dak Prescott, they're being awfully quiet about it, and they need to be quiet about it. You don't want to diminish his value, but I thought for years they sort of stuck with Tony Romo in the same specific realm, whereas he's good enough. You want to get him paid. He's one of the better quarterbacks. Like, you're right, Matt, the money is going to be there for Dak Prescott. The question is, do you want to get on one knee and propose for the next several years? Is he the guy with a really talented young roster group, especially obviously led by Zeke and Amari Cooper at the skill positions, Leighton Vander Esch on defense? Is this the quarterback that's going to get you finally back? Remember, we've said it on this podcast before. They haven't been to a title game in the NFC since 1995. Everybody gets to a title game, it feels like, every several years or so, but Dallas is the one team that hasn't. We're 24 years now on the hop, and it's got to be driving Jerry Jones crazy. He really has gone from a man in his late 40s who owned a football team to a guy in his 70s and no winning, no triumphs of any kind in the postseason.
We've counted a lot on the Dallas offense. What about the Dallas defense? We've established just how easy it was for the Vikings to run all over them. Do we think that the Dallas D is being perhaps a little bit overrated this season?
Yeah, I'm starting to come around to that, because you can really like individual players. Everybody loves Jalen Smith as a linebacker. I mentioned Leighton Vander Esch just in his second season, I should say. He's a first-round draft pick in 2018. But outside of that, there's a couple stars there, but they're not playing great collectively, not by any stretch of the imagination. And it's to take nothing away from Dalvin Cook. We're getting to the point with Dalvin Cook in Minnesota where the weapons that Kirk Cousins has is just the envy of every quarterback. Everybody would want, and they did this last night without Adam Thielen, healthy at all. Really impressive. Yeah. Everybody loves Diggs. Kyle Rudolph only caught the four balls for 14 yards, but two of them were scores in the red zone, where the Vikings struggled. Obviously, when Kirk Cousins struggles, it's generally red zone related. But Dalvin Cook was fantastic last night. Yeah, I want to see the Cowboys tighten up a little bit, and they don't have much time to tighten up either. We're talking about a 5-4 football team. Three of the next four games are on the road. Now, they're either going to play the Lions without Matt Stafford next weekend, or they're going to face a obviously rusty Matt Stafford. A rare day in Detroit when he doesn't suit up under center, but he couldn't obviously in the loss to the Bears. And then they go to Foxborough and play New England the week before Thanksgiving. Then it's a short week, and they play the Buffalo Bills. So they actually at Lions, at Patriots, home against Bills at 5-4 net. They've got to correct this in a hurry. They have to win two of those three games. They have to. They slip up against either the Lions or the Bills, even if we schedule in the Patriots game as a defeat, they'd better be 7-5 going into their last four, because they still have to go to Philadelphia. They still have to play what should be an angry Rams team in December. They've got a tough schedule ahead of them.
And that is, we're talking about Dak's future at the Cowboys. That is almost certain that if they don't make the playoffs, that'll be the end for Jason Garrett. What we were hearing on our radio show last night from the Dallas radio host Chris was the depth of the playoff run is going to be significant as well. If the Cowboys don't make the NFC Championship game, he was pretty clear that he had heard, and the general consensus is that that is the end of the road for Garrett. So it's a crucial few weeks coming up as far as his long-term future in Dallas is concerned. Just a quick line on the Vikings then. Are we taking them seriously in this top elite NFC bracket, or in your mind, are they still in that tier below, the second, the chasing pack?
It's everything except the quarterback tells me they can win the Super Bowl in that. Even coaching, I think, or get to the Super Bowl at the very least. I think they can get there. I want to see more from Kirk Cousins. Most people do. That was his 9th primetime game as a starting quarterback, either in Washington or Minnesota, and he upped his record from 1-7 to 2-7. You still need a little more on the resume at the end of the day. And, you know, he's cleaned some things up, even as we said, the loss last week against Kansas City, some conservative play calling. But he hasn't thrown an interception in his last 4 games. That's a long.
Yeah, you look at that ratio.
Yeah,
9 touchdowns.
Like 3 picks.
I mean, yeah.
9 touchdowns,
yeah,
18 no picks. 3, right? In the last four games.
In the last 4, 18-3 on the season. So that is, and his passer rating is well over 100. I mean, he's one of the most maligned quarterbacks in the NFL at the moment, but, he's not doing a whole lot wrong. There's not much he can do. I mean, you're absolutely right to make the Tony Romo comparison. I think, you know, making it with Dak, but you could apply this to Cousins as well. The book on Romo was, look, he's a talented player, but he can't win a playoff game. He can't get it done, you know, when it matters in the clutch. And, you know, Cousins, of course, has had a mixed track record in primetime games, but there, you know, very few playoff games to actually deliver on. So it wouldn't surprise me if he does come good and get that monkey off his back this season. They have a couple of playoff wins and that should put to bed the Kirk Cousins can't do it in primetime.
Oh, it would, but home advantage and winning that NFC North, that's massive. They host the Packers. They've obviously already gone to Green Bay. They get the Packers at their beautiful stadium in downtown Minneapolis, December 15th. And it's a night game as well. Looks like a Sunday night game based on the schedule. So Minnesota has to have that game at 7-3 trailing. Let's face it, the Chargers did the Vikings a massive favor by knocking Green Bay down last week, but obviously Green Bay climbed back on with a win over the Carolina Panthers and Kyle Allen. So you're still a game back, but you can really, you know, you're obviously cooked if you lose that home game to the Packers. And that's the problem with Cousins, is I think he needs to be in a great situation seeding wise for Minnesota to go where they need to go. It's tough to see, Nat, the Vikings as a 5th seed or a 6th seed and winning a couple games on the road. Could they do it once? Maybe so. And maybe you want that sort of softer NFC East winner. Minnesota could go in either Dallas or Philadelphia, and I think we could visualize some success. The way the Niners are playing, even New Orleans, despite their stumble over the weekend, I think it's going to be a tough ask to watch Kirk Cousins win 2 road playoff games and take his team to the Super Bowl in Miami. I think they need to win that division if they're going to have playoff success.
Well, let's stay in the NFC. We'll go on to the Saints, a baffling performance from New Orleans, getting it was getting served up against Drew Brees and co. from the Falcons, much maligned defense. A really, really curious performance from New Orleans. There was no help on the line. Of course, defensively, Marshawn Lattimore went out early on, which seemed to change the dynamic of the game quite significantly. What do you make of how easy the Falcons handled New Orleans, and how concerned should the Saints be with that performance?
Yeah, I think it's a real red flag for New Orleans, especially a home loss. Look, Atlanta, we've joked about Atlanta maybe being that team that wrecks things for the Dolphins or the Jets or the Cincinnati Bengals in terms of like sneaking into a top 3, top 4 draft position. The last time they were up that high, they got Matt Ryan. He's been their quarterback for close to 12, 13 seasons now. So he comes back, is healthy. I think we realize there's just more talent in Atlanta than a 1-7 football team. And sometimes you hear the cliche, the coaches say, they're like, well, it's like let sleeping dogs lie. We don't want to play that team. I know they've lost 6 straight, but they're going to wake up, and snap of a finger, Atlanta really woke up in familiar circumstances. There's nobody they love beating. There's nobody they love beating on the road more than New Orleans. But I think you nailed it with where New Orleans really struggled. They could not establish the run. They went away from the run once they got losing the football game. They just felt like they had to. Alvin Kamara, can you imagine having Alvin Kamara in fantasy and he gets four carries? And I know he had right. eight catches, so he had 12 touches for 74 yards. But that did not look like the Alvin Kamara with no holes to run through that we've seen before. And again, not terrible yards per carry anyway, but they had to go away from him just because of how out of control the game was getting. So it's worrying to me that the defense couldn't put much in on Matt Ryan, that they seem to fatigue. Obviously, that's still a football game, Nat, going into the fourth quarter. That's still one that I'm sure Saints fans are there saying, it's a four-point game. We're going to find our way back. But that early touchdown, first play, I think, of the fourth quarter with the Falcons in the red zone, they needed to stop there. You stop them there, and you've got a 16-9 game. But the touchdown made it 20-9, and it just felt like New Orleans sagged after that. And for a Sean Payton team, usually you don't think they're out of anything. Yeah. Now that said, New Orleans, this is the last thing anybody next on their schedule wanted to see. And the Saints are going to get to go to Tampa next week and then home against Carolina. They get the Falcons again. They're all divisional games, the next three. And New Orleans is probably going to run roughshod, I think, over the rest of that division. I don't see another team that's going to win the NFC West, but that could be a costly loss on the weekend in terms of getting home field advantage, as we were talking about the importance of it.
It was really interesting to look at the mismatch on the line when you put it in context. So Atlanta has, I think it's fair to say, failed to get much pass rush going. I think three sacks in the last six games is what they've recorded, but they are nailed six against this completely desperate Saints offensive line that, as you said, couldn't get the run established either. And it, curious statistics as well, because you would have thought 9 points, no touchdowns, long time since the Saints have been held to no scores, no touchdowns. It meant on both sides of the ball they were struggling, but Breece, 287 yards, not a vintage day for him by any stretch of the imagination, but Michael Thomas picked up 152 of those. Incidentally, he became the fastest player to reach 400 receptions in NFL history, so props to him. So they, it wasn't as if they were getting nothing going on, but as you said, when it got to the clutch situation and you would back the Saints 99 times out of 100, that was when the line looked most fragile and failed to hold up, and Breece was getting murdered in the last 5-7 minutes of the game.
Well, yeah, I mean, I look at the drives. Atlanta makes that 20-9, as you said, start of the fourth quarter. They go three plays, no completions, they got 6 yards on the ground. They go three and out. They had a 5-play drive and had to punt the ball on their second drive after Atlanta had made it 23-9. So you're 7.5 minutes left and you've got no first downs on your two drives in the quarter. And that's when Saints fans just started to head for the exit. So yeah, disappointing home game at Atlanta. Again, I still think those divisional teams are always tricky. They're always going to be, the Steelers, I know they're having a bit of a renaissance right now, but I was thinking that even yesterday watching them play the Rams is that they're a team that can leap up and beat anybody, and they'd love to beat the Ravens. They'd love to push the Browns further into the muck in that division. I don't know what the greatest rivalry in the NFL has been the last few years, and something I'm not sure there has been a wonderful division rivalry like what San Francisco Seattle was for several of those years with Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick and sometimes Alex Smith. But Atlanta, New Orleans over the last few years, those have been really competitive games. Those have been both teams always fighting for first in the division and for playoff spots. And just because Atlanta's record fell by the wayside this season didn't mean Atlanta wanted it any less. They really, really stood up, and we talked about Dan Quinn too. It at least saves the Wolves.
Has he saved his gig, do you think?
Yeah. It saves the Wolves from Dan Quinn's door for another week. That's for sure.
For a week. What do you think, though, long term? You know, is it a case of if they can build on this and get to close to 500 or respectable record that he's going to be fine? Or do you think that the damage has already been done?
Yeah, man. I think a different coach next year in Atlanta. This may just be, you know, maybe the case of staying 1 year too long. And it doesn't mean he won't get a head coaching opportunity anywhere else, but I think they see a little bit of an aging core on this team. They're sure there's still some players in their prime. Grady Jarrett was fantastic on the pass rush. You mentioned that, and I wanted to mention him with 2.5 sacks. He had tons of tackles for losses as well in the Saints backfield, but at 2-7, I think the best they can pull off might be a 6-10 season.
Okay. Let's say you mentioned the Steelers, another formidable defensive performance, real concerns for the LA Rams. It was a game I was watching quite closely because the first half of the evening was Red Zone Chaos. Mm-hmm. And as you well know, having done that show with me, there is all kinds of stuff. And the finishes we were getting, we'll get into some of those in a bit, were remarkable in the early window. But it means, particularly when there are only three games in the later window, you can sit back and breathe a bit more. And I was particularly keying in on this game. Fascinating that the Rams really spluttering offensively. Again, Jared Goff looked like the slightly overly concerned younger Jared Goff that we've seen, looked a little bit phased, couldn't really get many of his pieces going at all. Cooper Kupp, no receptions. He had a drop, of course, but no catches at all. When you consider the last time we saw Cooper Kupp in London, he tore the place apart. So yeah. An indifferent offensive performance from the Rams, predicated, of course, on a mightily impressive defense performance from the Steelers. So what do we make, firstly, of what this means for the Rams? Because having seemed to build a bit of a comeback run after dropping three straight games, they've really regressed after this.
Yeah,
weekend.
They really have. And I know you and I talked at the start of the season about Jared Goff and couldn't believe some of the preseason quarterback rankings that had him, you know, below 15 or 16, below even 10 or 12. I know you and I both agreed on Jared Goff's making us look bad, Nat. That's got to get corrected over the next several weeks.
Happy about it.
Heading into the Christmas season. Yeah, he seems to.
But, you know, comparing him to, we were talking about Kyle Allen, you mentioned the Panthers, right? I was watching, you know, because those games, of course, were going on simpatico, watching Allen's composure. And because a lot of talk going into that game had been, well, with Cam Newton going on IR, what are the Panthers going to do? Because I'm not sure Kyle Allen's the real deal. Are they really going to build a team around him? I don't know if he's the future. Comparing those on the basis of how composed they look in real time next to each other last night, Kyle Allen every time over Jared Goff. And as you rightly say, Greg, I've definitely been on this side of the pond a staunch advocate of Jared Goff and a Goff apologist. But yeah, he's not there at all at the moment. It's worrying times for the Rams.
Yeah, he's definitely lost himself. He's not also that quarterback that has the versatility to take off and make something work on his feet. We're not asking him to be Deshaun Watson or obviously Lamar Jackson or even Josh Allen to get out of trouble. But when he's been in trouble, took four sacks yesterday. He was hurried a lot. You have to credit the Steelers' pass rush, of course. But yeah, that looks like the Jared Goff I saw yesterday looks like that's the Jeff Fisher Jared Goff. That's the rookie Jared Goff. That's the guy that Carson Wentz completely and utterly outplayed in the 2016 season after he was drafted. And they've got nowhere to turn. Blake Bortles is their backup. Jared Goff is the guy. He makes the most money. He's got the mega contract and hopefully it's just a, you know, a little hiccup along the way, but just the road.
You mentioned Blake Bortles. Greg, yeah. That was great when Goff got his bell rung and went out of the game for a minute and they brought Bortles in who just looked completely panic-stricken, fluffed the snap. Well, look, certainly the ball control was shady, so they took him out after one snap.
Well, I didn't see it. Like he's got credit for a rushing play, so you tell me, did he run the ball forward or did he fumble the snap and just fall forward? What happened there?
Highly ambiguous. I think he would say the claim the former, but it was, and he just got pulled out because of course they didn't, it was on a third down and they tried the fake punt and blew that as well. But they didn't keep Bortles in to go for it on fourth down. They just wheeled him in and out on one play, which was that could be the totality of Blake Bortles' LA Rams career.
The
most Bortles thing I've seen.
And here's the struggle is their division does them no favor. San Fran and Seattle, they're a combined 15-2 right now. And obviously one of the losses was to each other. And the Rams are sitting there going, can we catch either team? If we make the playoffs at all, are we locked in as the sixth seed? And we talked about Minnesota maybe having to struggle to go on the road. The one thing the Rams have been able to do and why they've had that success, they had it last year, was having home advantage in games. That was, though they went to New Orleans and won the NFC title game. And we thought, I think we all agree, Jared Goff outplayed Drew Brees in the second half of that game. He didn't turn the ball over in overtime. And yeah, of course, big pass interference, missed call. We get that 100%. But nonetheless, that's still Jared Goff moving the football back the other way. For the Los Angeles Rams. It's been a struggle to do that right now. I think obviously Arizona's been a tougher out in that division with Kyler Murray this year than a lot of people thought. I think they're a better team than than 3-6-1 that they couldn't take down their former coach yesterday, Bruce Arians. But it's not looking great for the Rams. And here's the stat that jumped out at me, this Super Bowl loser hangover thing, that 9 of the last 19 Super Bowl losers. So you're still the conference champion, have missed the playoffs the following year. And it's usually not the Patriots. Atlanta, when they blew the lead against New England down in Houston, they still squeezed into the playoffs next year. But we saw last year with the Philadelphia Eagles to some extent, like, though they made the playoffs, it was not the same team. The Eagles won the Super Bowl, so that's not a good example. New England went from losing to winning, but there's been enough examples over the last several years. Those Eli Manning Giants teams, same thing. That, like, it's, you lose the Super Bowl and it's a big problem for you the next year, and we're seeing it with the Rams now.
A lot has been made of the Rams tinkering on the offensive line in the off season, which clearly is, I had issues in a number of places, not least establishing the run, and you compound that with Todd Gurley's regression. He 73 yards on 12 carries, a decent actually, for relatively speaking, for Gurley yesterday, 6.1 average on that, but no Brandon Cooks. He was out again. This concussion issue lingers on for him. Gerald Everett stepped up for them, but they are not the same offense they were last year, not just because of the pieces, but because of the trenches as well. And you factor that in with Jared Goff's inconsistency and seeming lack of confidence. I mean, he barely completed 50% of his passes yesterday. And it was as I alluded to at the top, it was an exceptionally good performance from the Steelers, the secondary in particular, Joe Hayden stepping up. Minka Fitzpatrick must be one of the deals of the season, Greg.
Well, absolutely. And I remember thinking at the time how shocking it was. And then I reevaluated literally a day later. I'm like, what is Pittsburgh doing? They're sitting there. I think they were 1-3 at the time. They've lost Ben Roethlisberger for the season. You know, they're struggling to run the ball, obviously, in a post Le'Veon Bell universe as they were last year. I know James Conner's had some injury issues, but nonetheless, you're like, why trade for him? And then you think about it the next day and you're like, because they plan to keep him long term and because he makes their defense better right now. Like, we still don't have a clue. Don't have a clue what kind of Ben Roethlisberger returns to the Pittsburgh Steelers in 2020, but we know a couple things. They're winning games based on their defense this season. And Minka Fitzpatrick's been obviously at the pick six return last week. They're getting a great year, a career year from Mark Barron, who's been excellent for them. So, you know, and think about all the criticism of Mike Tomlin the last couple of years. And I was in there as well. I think any other organization might have made a change because of some of the immaturity of the players, some of the infighting within. We remember the Jacksonville playoff game. They just did not look ready. They did not look ready to play a team after a bye week. Pittsburgh was the number two seed, and Jacksonville had played the week before and was really lethargic on offense against the Buffalo Bills. What'd they win that game? 10-3. And they walk into Heinz Field and just start pounding, battering the Pittsburgh defense. And you thought maybe Mike Tomlin won't survive this. Mike Tomlin showed you the last few weeks why he's been in the league a long, long time. He can coach. Yeah. And that was a big, big win. And let's look on the other side. The bloom's a little bit off the rose on Sean McVay. This is the biggest test of Sean McVay's early and young career. And he's going to have a long career and probably with the Rams, but he needs to turn the tide here. I don't think it's acceptable for a team with as much offensive talent as the Rams to miss the playoffs. They've got to find a way to sneak in. Even if they're a one and done team in January, and that they got to get in, not to keep McVay's job, but to keep his reputation intact, I think.
Yeah, it's a really, really good point. And looking at the playoff picture, as we move to the AFC, that is getting really, really tasty, certainly in terms of the wild card race. The Raiders winning on Thursday Night Football to improve to 500. And now, obviously, with that Kansas City loss, which we'll get into shortly, they are knocking on the door there. But certainly a 5-4 record puts them in the playoff picture. That's the Steelers' record now after that win. So improbably four straight wins for Pittsburgh means they're in the race for that wild card as well.
And look at the Bills. The Bills walk themselves right back into mediocrity with that loss to the Browns. They really could have said that five seed, we're not going to catch New England probably, but that five seed's ours. You're not going to be able to come take it. And just a sputtering offensive performance against the Browns.
Yeah, big time. They're 6-3 now, Buffalo, after that defeat. Quite rightly, as you say, Greg, right in the mix. And the teams in the South, all of them realistically still in the hunt. The Jags, the outsiders, having fallen to 4-5 after their no-show at Wembley a couple of weeks ago. But the Titans, what a win for them, 5-5 now. The Colts, after their upset against the Miami, 5-4, they fall to now. Two straight defeats for them. There was no Jacoby Brissett, of course, so you need to put an asterisk on that one. No T.Y. Hilton either for the Colts, but Nevertheless, here they are, right in the thick of it. And the Texans on the bye week still lead the South 6-3. But realistically, that division could go anyway. And, it quite conceivably could have a number of, two wild cards from that division. So the AFC wild card race, let's get into that next. Really, really wide open. John Gruden, I mentioned, I think on the Friday show with Jay Bell, if the Raiders go on and make the playoffs, great. Is John Gruden the coach of the year?
Yeah, he is. And I think I was just about to say, you read my mind. I think the Raiders, if I had to write down a team and stick it in an envelope and we open it after Christmas time, it's not a gift certificate. It's the first AFC wildcard team. It's not that I don't love you. I'll get you something, Nat. But the Oakland Raiders are that team for me. And, you know, Thursday night football kind of, sometimes you're like, oh my goodness, has the week flown by? Is it Thursday already? What's the game tonight? And sometimes you're not terribly excited. And the records sometimes dictate that.
Terribly excited. It was, Thursday night football.
But I was thrilled by that. That matchup had incredible intrigue last week. And you're like, well, neither team's leading their division. Neither team is really rolling right now. But I get to watch Philip Rivers and Derek Carr, so that's not so bad. I get to watch two teams that LA, I should say, was coming off a big win, obviously, and a great defensive performance against the Green Bay Packers. That's the outside of Chicago, maybe in the opening week. That's the team that's done the best against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers offense. But then I looked at, you know, I love to look ahead at my fixture list. The Raiders of the next 2 weeks. Yes, I thought if they win that game, home against the Bengals at the Jets. Yep. This is going to be a 7-4 football team, going into Arrowhead to play the Chiefs. And we're just not sure what the Chiefs are right now with all their defensive struggles.
Wait a minute. Are you taking this to the level that the Raiders could win the AFC West? Is that where we're going?
Well, if they can win at Arrowhead, they are going to win the AFC West. I think this is a 7-4 football team after 11 games. And I like them more than the Bills. The Brissett injury is the asterisk for me. If you'd said this to me 48 hours ago, Jacoby Brissett's fine and he'll stay healthy the rest of the year. I mean, how can you guarantee that? But that's the real warning sign. Because I remember loving the Colts last year with Andrew Luck, and they had a very favorable schedule. They won the games they had to win against the Titans and the Jags. But nonetheless, this could be all about Oakland. And I'll give you another name. John Gruden, I thought maybe had been away from the game too long. That contract, all the mess with Antonio Brown. A lot of people dug in equally on Mike Mayock, and they said, you've been on TV. You know your draft analysis. But what do you know about running a professional? He really hasn't done a lot of front office work, like say an Aussie Newsom has. He really hadn't done that. And I'm telling you, Mike Mayock probably deserves. Those of us who just thought it's a clown show out there in Oakland last year before they go to Vegas, we were wrong. And I think they're going to be a playoff team because I think they're winning the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I love that. And what a story that would be. So let's stay with, join some of those dots, stay with the West and the Chiefs' defeat to the Titans, who, as I said a moment ago, have now proved to a 500 record and are right back in at the playoff hunt. It was an absolute thriller, and it was a game really that the Chiefs shouldn't have lost. They had the opportunity to close it. They were ahead, of course, and Harrison Butker could have taken them away to a 9-point lead with not enough time left for the Titans to get back into it. But the kick was blocked. Tannehill then led the Titans offense up the field in devastating fashion to put them ahead. The Chiefs had a shot at getting back into it, and Harrison Butker, their kicker, blows it again. So special teams costing the game for the Kansas City Chiefs. But that's not to take anything away from the Titans. Mike Vrabel and a well-coached team. They seem to be a really balanced side. Got a bit of mojo. Now Derrick Henry getting his ground game going as well. They seem to have found their quarterback. I'm getting quite big on this Titans side, maybe putting a run together and sneaking in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. And you forget just a playoff team a scant 2 years ago, and they've had 3-9-7 seasons in a row. They feel like they've been that team that has just fallen short of the playoffs, but they got that win. They obviously won at Arrowhead. Now, remember, Kansas City's had an awful lot of home playoff losses. That's not the Superman's fortress exactly in the postseason at Arrowhead. Andy Reid finally got a home playoff win last year against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, quite obviously. But nonetheless, you look and say Kansas City is just struggling to do a lot of things right now. But on the Tennessee front, yeah, there's something that's changed, it feels like, since Ryan Tannehill took over. Do they have somehow more confidence in him than they do Marcus Mariota? It's hard to see it. Like, there's a guy under 200 yards passing yesterday. but they're putting up points really consistently. They haven't scored under 20 points since they had that terrible loss against the Broncos. And I think that was basically the end of Marcus Mariota. I think he might have started the game against the Chargers the week after, but they were losing games. Look at their four losses to start the season. 19-17, 20-7, 14-7, 16-0. They're just doing nothing offensively. So the last three weeks, I should say, they scored 23, 20, and now 35 points. So there's a potency with the offense that we didn't necessarily think would be there. And they're getting enough stops on defense. But I think when we looked at the Kansas City Chiefs and we saw maybe a team that was right on the edge about to take that huge leap, remember how close the AFC title game was? Patrick Mahomes never got the football. Like, Kansas City has struggled defensively. And they've struggled defensively even the year before with Alex Smith healthy, in some of their playoff runs. They've just struggled to find defensive playmakers that you can rely on, that you can count on, that are going to look at all the guys the Eagles had defensively when they won the Super Bowl. Look at the Green Bay players when Green Bay went to the Super Bowl 9 years ago that could make a play on defense. The Chiefs are still struggling with that. They feel a little bit like, almost like a Pro Bowl team where you've got all the stars whipping up and down, zipping up and down the field offensively. But who's making a tough tackle? Who's getting a sack at the key time? And they're just struggling with that concept right now, it feels like.
I think we knew they would always be that side this season again. But the ease that Derrick Henry, and what I mean by that is stacked offensively, they're just going to outscore you and outgun you, right? That's kind of how they're built. But the ease that Derrick Henry was running through them, we know that that's been a particular problem for him. I think their rush defense over the last couple of years, but it was 188 yards, and that was 23 carries.
Eight yards a carry, Nat. Incredible.
Yeah, it really is. So, concerns for the Chiefs, and I just love this idea. You got me thinking about it now. The Raiders winning the AFC West.
Because we thought the Chargers improbable. Would be the threat. We thought, okay, if anything, maybe we almost gave the AFC. We thought the AFC was a weaker conference, and we thought, well, here's three teams that are automatically going to make the playoffs. These are the three I would have had in no matter what, the Patriots, the Chiefs, and the Chargers. So we've seen the Chargers probably not, equip themselves as a playoff team. I still think we think Kansas City is going to be that team, but who thought they'd be 6-4? I know. Look, they struggled through the Mahomes injury, but that's not what's cost them. They won the Vikings game with Matt Moore. They almost beat the Packers on Sunday Night Football with Matt Moore as well. They were right there in the fourth quarter. So this hasn't been the Patrick Mahomes injury that's led them to be 6-4 after a 4-0 start. It's hard to believe they're 2-4 in their last six games.
And the fact that it isn't on, we can't put it all at the feet of Mahomes and the injury in particular, I guess makes it even more concerning for Kansas City. Okay, we talked about serious contenders in the AFC, and you're right. I think even on this very show a few weeks ago, I was still fairly confident that the Chargers would make the cut. They are one of those teams, as you rightly say, that we hyped up a lot at the start of the season, haven't been there. A team that we thought would be a contender, but perhaps not as devastatingly potent as they've looked and absolutely did yesterday, albeit against a vanilla Cincinnati Bengals side, is the Baltimore Ravens, improving out to 7-2 with that shellacking of Cincinnati, and Lamar Jackson gaining more plaudits, a perfect passer rating, one of the touchdowns of the season. And again, on both sides of the ball, against a bad Bengals side with a rookie quarterback starting for them, I get it. But the Ravens, and we've talked about this season, Greg, which of the teams in the AFC could realistically go toe-to-toe with the Patriots in the playoffs, in the AFC Championship game potentially, and win? The Chiefs have certainly been for a long time a team that we consider a contender, but I refer our listeners to the last 5 minutes of the discussion. The Texans have that sucker punch ability, of course, with Deshaun Watson, but are flawed. We've rumbled through a number of teams that are all around the same level and could quite conceivably get into the playoffs, but are they going to really give the Patriots a run for their money in the championship game? The Ravens, beaten last week, destroy the Bengals this week. Are they suddenly knocking on the door to be the number one seed in the AFC right now?
Yeah, it feels like it, doesn't it? I don't know that they're going to catch New England. I think the Patriots' schedule is really comfy. That they get, obviously, the AFC East teams, and I just don't know. So every now and then, there's a slip-up. We know for years New England would lose that game in Miami, often late in the year, whether the Dolphins were really good or not. I just don't know that the Patriots are going to have a stumble in their own conference. That said, You've got during red zone next week, you've got Texans and Ravens. You got to remember to mention the other games. You got a game with Deshaun Watson against Lamar Jackson. The early game. I don't know how you're turning away and paying attention to any of the other seven or eight games that are on, but that game right away, massive statement for either team. And it's in Baltimore. So you got Deshaun Watson going on the road. That the Patriots, I don't know who they play next week, but they're going to be watching that game. If they can get it, they've got a later game against Philadelphia, but probably early days in that game, they're going to have their ear to the ground a little bit, because I think they must think the winner of that game next week is making a major statement. Remember, the Texans win that game in Baltimore. They go to 7-3. Baltimore falls to 7-3, but that's the all important tie break. And it probably puts whoever wins in that second seed. And that bye may be everything. That bye may mean the ultimate in January to finding your way into Foxborough potentially for the AFC title game. If I had to pick right now, I'm waiting for the wheels to fall off Lamar Jackson. Not that I'm a skeptic, but there's got to be something there. This all just feels too good to be true. How the Ravens for year after year after year got good quarterbacking, not great quarterback. I'm talking post Super Bowl when they beat San Francisco. So ever since then, Joe Flacco's been just like we documented with the Tony Romos and maybe even in Chicago with Jay Cutler, just a good enough quarterback to keep your fans happy. Good enough quarterback that makes you think you can win every week, but you're not going to bench him. You're not struggling. You're not finishing 6-10 or 7-9. And now they've got this uber superstar that honestly is reminding everybody of Michael Vick about 2003, 2004 and the cautionary tale before obviously before the dog fighting and the incarceration. Yeah. Michael Vick still never ended up getting to a Super Bowl, and Michael Vick still had a couple catastrophic injuries in his career and probably ran the football too much and didn't do enough work in terms of reading defenses. But Nat, we're only a year and a half in, and think of the GMs. Think of the GMs that stay up at night, if they're still employed or not, and think, I could have sold my owner. I could have sold my player personnel on Lamar Jackson. And I don't blame the Browns for taking Baker, and I don't blame the Jets for taking Sam Darnold, and maybe even the two Joshes. But think about that big gap in quarterbacks from about, what, pick 11 through 31, where you could revolutionize your franchise, and you just thought, I don't trust Lamar Jackson's arm. I don't trust that he's even going to be a serviceable NFL quarterback or Cordell Stewart type. And you had about 20 picks in a row, and a lot of GMs just swung and missed on not drafting Lamar Jackson that year.
You know, Lamar Jackson is still only 22 years old.
Seeing as Jared Goff is 25, like, we are asking a lot. If you come out and leave that year of eligibility on the table, you are getting considerably. Whereas Baker Mayfield Baker Mayfield's no kid. I think he's about to turn 26. So you end, because he had a transfer season, you end up do having a lot of quarterbacks that are still trying to figure it all out in their youth and exuberance. But Lamar Jackson looks like he's got a lot figured out right now.
Yeah, it's possible over 3,000 yards rushing, and adding that, you know, to the mix, extraordinary stuff, an all-round quarterback. And you're absolutely right. The book on him obviously was, and some were, not particularly eloquent and downright offensive about his lack of passing ability, you know, when he came out of college. But even I think the more balanced assessors and analysts were watching, unclear, jury's out based on what we saw of the early sample size. But based on what we're seeing now, he looks to be in the right situation, which of course is so fun. Fundamental, and it's a good question. We were speculating before we came on air, and I think we did on the show at some point last week, maybe it was with Iron Mike, looking at the draft class that he came out of, and you know, the benefit of 2020 hindsight and recency bias and all of those things factored in, would you change? Who would you pick first? It does depend on your offense and your situation. Would you look at that and think of the other quarterbacks taken ahead of him and want to build a team around him more than any of those? I mean, you think you have to right now, right?
I think so, yeah. It sounds like I'm a bit of a weather vane on it. I still have a tremendous belief in Sam Darnold. I do think, I think he's had a real bad hand dealt to him in terms of the talent around him and the Jets. Look at the dysfunction. Look at the Adam Gase scenario there. This looks like a guy that's not going to survive. I know they won over the Giants, but this looks like a guy that's not going to survive. And I don't know that it's just the New York media. I don't know that it's just the scrutiny, because expectations weren't even that high for the New York Jets. I still think Sam Darnold's a guy I would have taken one overall. And I still think the Browns made a mistake by taking Baker Mayfield. And I think the Giants made a mistake by taking Saquon Barkley. These are both really, these guys are both going to be in the league, I think, 7-8 years from now. Barkley especially. But Darnold to me was a no miss number one. Not exactly an Andrew Luck, but also not a guy who was going to fall flat on his face. And I think in the right situation, he's still going to be a big quarterback. I will say, and you know, I'd love to know the oral history of this and read it or watch a big ESPN documentary on it. But the Ravens drafted, people forget this, the Ravens Nat drafted at 25. They took a tight end named Hayden Hurst out of South Carolina. Yep. Now, did they know that Jackson was going to be there at 32? Because they've got 25 and 32 to pick from. They had to sit there and wait. If they were sure that none of the teams, the Falcons, the Seahawks, the Steelers, the Jags, the Vikings, the Patriots, if they knew they were all were going to pass on Lamar Jackson, it's a masterstroke. Otherwise, maybe it's just a little bit of luck. It's just a little. We don't know how many times teams passed on Tom Brady, hundreds of times back in 2000. Yeah. But Lamar Jackson sitting there at 32, knowing you had a pick seven picks earlier and you skipped him, that's pretty gutsy stuff from the Ravens if they knew what they were doing.
Yeah, big time. You mentioned Baker Mayfield. Let's wrap up with the Cleveland Browns getting a win, only just, of course. And I mean, it was a game that they almost threw away on so many different occasions. Their red zone woes continuing, questionable calls from Freddie Kitchens again. So they got the win. I mean, they can build up some kind of mojo, I guess, but they're realistically, they're not in the playoff race at all, and a desperately disappointing season for them.
No, it's you know, I'm sure there's satisfaction in getting a win. They really wrecked a concept for the Buffalo Bills, like I said, of being the team that was going to emerge as the main wild card contender in the AFC, but it's too far gone. And it's funny, I mentioned Sam Darnold. I know Darnold's getting just barbecued in New York for saying, well, they can still make the playoffs. They have a game worse record than the Browns do, a 2-7. And Sam Darnold would not rule out a long playoff run, which means you're basically running the table and then hoping an awful lot of other things happen. But yeah, I think they put some things together. Baker Mayfield played one of his cleanest games, at 26-38, 238 yards, lots to Jarvis Landry. I still wonder if there's still a struggle to find Odell Beckham Jr. as an integral part of that offense. Just the five catches, the longest was 16 yards. He just has not had that big play capability for the Browns. And yesterday was more of a defensive struggle. Obviously, neither team scoring 20 points. But yeah, the Browns again, I think there's two guys, Adam Gase and the Jets and Freddie Kitchens and the Browns. I think it's going to be curtains for both guys at the end of this particular season. And I just think the Browns sort of misfired on this, and there's too much talent there. They get Kareem Hunt into the lineup and obviously after an 8-game suspension for a domestic violence problem, and Kareem Hunt ran the ball really well in limited time. But what a 1-2 combo with Chubb and Hunt in the backfield. They're going to win more games than they won in the first half of the year, but it's not going to be enough to make the playoffs.
You see, I think I'm buying into the argument with Hunt and Chubb that is really representative, almost a microcosm of the Browns' troubles at the moment, because Chubb, they bafflingly didn't use very much at the start of the season. They went to him and he's been carrying their offense. And then Hunt, who is whatever you think of him off the field, is a hell of a player. Do you go with a hot hand of Chubb? You've got to mix it up a little bit. And they did. And is that going to change the dynamic? So you've got this wonderful talent, not a clear strategy there, and just quite a disruptive, a result that you're right. Maybe it is a Freddie Kitchens issue that a more experienced head coach could sort out and fix. And maybe that's a little bit unfair on Freddie Kitchens. Maybe he's just one of those guys that is a great coordinator, isn't a head coach or isn't a head coach right now, but down the line, you get the feeling you do need a wily old dog in this Cleveland locker room right now to just manage this range of talent. I know that in the NFL, it's unlike other leagues, right? Other sporting leagues where talent is distributed fairly evenly anyway. So coaches are used to dealing with superstars. Whereas, for example, if you compare European football and somebody getting a step up from a Malaga or, smaller team here and gets the big gig, and can they handle the ego? Can they handle the locker room? You think that should be more of a straightforward thing in the NFL, but this Cleveland Browns side in particular, and possibly it was because of the hype preseason and they were Super Bowl bound and some of them were calling out that they were going to be Super Bowl bound without having actually done anything. Maybe there's something quite unique about this collection of players right now that just needs a stronger more seasoned head coach to make sense of it.
Well, and a great Thursday game this week. We'll see if they can build something. They got the Steelers coming in. So the last thing they wanted to see probably was a 4-win Steelers team and short rest for both teams, but not a lot of travel, obviously, for Pittsburgh to get to Cleveland. The guy I'm thinking of, as you were describing, maybe what they need, maybe what their general manager will decide they need, Mike McCarthy. It's incredible how visual I was thinking about him. And it's amazing how you can come back into style after just a little bit of time out. We talked about Jim Harbaugh on the pod a month ago or so as a guy that if he wants to leave Michigan, he's going to get tons of offers. The market just didn't seem that hot for Mike McCarthy. There were stories out of Green Bay, too controlling or wasn't involved in the mix enough. You heard a lot of different tales about where Mike McCarthy was. But for the Jets and Sam Darnold, for Cleveland and Baker Mayfield, I'm sure Buffalo has their coach. I think they love what they've got there, and that's going to work with Josh Allen, and at least in terms of being consistent as a QB coach combo. But I think maybe Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold probably both go to bed at night and know that their current head coach is not going to be the head coach that necessarily takes them to glory. And Mike McCarthy sitting out there going, I might be the perfect fit. And I won't doubt if there's at least some mutual interest or some phone calls. I think McCarthy's going to have the pick of a few teams this offseason and get another long run at this.
That is a great shout. And you know what? Bringing this full circle and wrapping it up, if you tie that into Gruden and the book on him, was he's been out of the game too long. You can't be out of the game for too long. And the fact that is going well, we know what the NFL is like. It's a copycat league. It is a voguish league. And they will say, well, you know what? Let's take a guy. And he hasn't been out nearly as long, of course, as Gruden was out of the game. So this idea that once you're a couple of seasons out of the mix, you're done and you put out to pasture. I could easily see that happening. It's a great show.
Yeah. And one of those things as well. Now I don't think he's getting a 10-year contract. I do think that. I think I might limit that about the Jets or that's a long, long time to be coaching either the New York Jets or Cleveland. I mean, usually those teams have about 6 coaches over the span of 10 years. They'd like to minimize that somewhat, but yeah, Mike McCarthy, he was in Green Bay forever, Nat, but he got that job really young. He got that job in his early 40s. So I want to say he's only 55, 56 years old. And that's he's got a lot of coaching left in him, and you can count on a pretty motivated guy as well, given he got moved out of Green Bay so quickly in the middle of last season, not at the end, but in the middle.
Is he mathematically old enough to be Lamar Jackson's grandfather?
It's close. It really is. You have to see the family tree, but he's very close.
I'll work on the maths there. Greg, cracking stuff as ever. Really appreciate your insight. If our listeners want to follow you on social media, where can they head?
Greg Brady TO, where I'm at right now, doing shows in Toronto on AM 640, doing a little bit of news talk, some sports thrown in there.
Yeah,
the mix.
How's the new gig going?
I have a lot of Brexit opinions, Nat. You'll have to tune there's my idea. The exact subject that most Britons don't want to talk about. It's the subject I want to talk about the most. So I'm in a perfect spot to do it.
Yeah, do you take callers on the show?
once in a while, yeah, yeah.
Okay, you got to let me know. I'm going to try and break through your operation.
You're going to disguise your voice. This is going to be one of those Liam Neeson hostage-taking things. You're going to have a voice decoder behind yourself, I think.
I just rely on my box of tricks and my accents and see if I can get past you.
Yeah, if you could be a leave MP and a remain MP and two different phone calls, I would appreciate that. Mix it up a little bit.
Okay. All right. I'll get to work on that. Great chat to you, man. We'll check in with you very soon. And a superb Greg Brady there. Looking back on a fascinating week 10 in the NFL. Excellent work as ever from Greg. We're back Wednesday with Iron Mike, Ben Isaacs, tag teaming, doubling down. Make sure you don't miss it. Subscribe whichever podcatcher you're listening to. You'll get the pods dropped in without you having to do anything. Easy peasy. Hope you enjoyed. We'll see you Wednesday. Bye for now, guys.